yay, you know, China, well, the BRICS Bank, all of these new things are coming along to undermine that. Unfortunately, it goes one level deeper than that, and that level is that at the very top of this bankster pyramid, the Chinese elite is connected directly in with the U.S. Western elite.
Well, friends, I'm very pleased to have back on the line one of the world's best investigative reporters and truth journalists, James Corbett. He's a contributor at globalresearch.ca, the International Forecaster, Boiling Frogs Post, New World Next Week, and of course his own site, CorbettReport.com. James, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me. It's good to be back talking with you again.
Hey, it's a thrill to have you back, and I want to congratulate you on yet another imaginative, creative truth video, OKC, a conspiracy theory.
Yes, well, thank you for the congratulations, and I just hope that it does a similar thing that those videos did for 9/11 and for JFK, which is just to shine light on how stupid the official story really is, and it really is top to bottom a pack of lies. I was meaning to follow it up directly with a podcast episode about Timothy McVeigh and his role, or lack thereof, in the bombing itself, but unfortunately that podcast is taking longer than expected, so it might be a few more days before that's released.
Well, it'll be worth waiting for. And of course, your 9/11, a conspiracy theory, went absolutely viral, telling everyone everything they need to know about 9/11 as a false flag operation in 5 simple minutes. We should probably have you do one for 7/7, the Boston bombings, Sandy Hook. There's a litany of other videos, James, the world would like to see from you, my friend. But being one of the busiest truth journalists in the world today, I really don't know how you find the time to do all of it. Where do you find the time, James?
Lack of any life outside of this and my family, basically. But but no, I've actually slowed down production quite a bit since my son was born, and that's not something I'm sad about. I mean, that's just a fact of life. So, but no, I still continue to work on the website and every spare opportunity and every spare moment. And I also have the capable help of Brock West of APPerspective.net, who's been helping me out behind the scenes with some editing and things like that. That's been a huge help and really has been one of the reasons I'm able to produce as much as I do. So without that kind of support and the support, of course, of everyone who follows me at CorbettReport.com, I wouldn't be able to do this.
Well, you must have a very supportive, loving wife as well.
More than I could possibly say, and probably more than I deserve, but I won't complain.
Congrats on the birth of your son, too. How old is he now?
He is just about to turn 2 years old.
That's exciting. It goes so fast. I know everyone says that, and it sounds cliche, but it just could not be more true. So savor the years, my friend. And I want everybody to just keep this overarching theme in perspective as we go through this list of items tonight with James. And that theme is a depopulation agenda. Let's just sort of keep that in mind as we go through these topics and see if we can come out at the end with any sort of discernible, quantifiable information or knowledge pointing to a depopulation agenda. Now, first on the list tonight, James, is the BRICS Bank, AIIB, and the SGE. It's clear that global wealth is moving east to west. Now, as reader Long John Silver from SGT Report notes, does it spell total collapse for the Western criminal banks, or are the same criminal banksters at the top of that pyramid too? Will the people at the top of the pyramid really be toppled?
No, they won't. And that is something that I think it would serve us well to understand and to document so that we don't fall into the trap of supporting false idols and false hopes, which is exactly what's happening, unfortunately, amongst a large segment of the population. Of course, the largest segment of the population is that segment that just tends to believe whatever narrative is passing through the news headlines. So they will tend to believe rah-rah, U.S., China, Russia, bad, you know, the transfer of wealth that is demonstrably happening is a bad thing, and we're, you know, it's going to be the end of the nation. People in the alternative media tend to see it as, well, the U.S. is the driving heart and force of NATO and all the military aggression that we see going on and all of this. So any stop against that, any bulwark against that is a good thing. Thus, yay, you know, China, well, the BRICS Bank, all of these new things are coming along to undermine that. Unfortunately, it goes one level deeper than that, and that level is that at the very top of this bankster pyramid, the Chinese elite is connected directly in with the U.S. Western elite, and that's demonstrable. It's something that I did an entire podcast on a few months ago, China and the New World Order, the transcript of which has just been posted to my website, which documents how there's a there's eight immortal families. They're called the Eight Immortals, that all relate into the Deng Xiaoping presidency of the 1970s. And basically from that time onwards, and even before then, if you actually look into Mao and the fact that he was a Yale boy, and Yale and Skull and Bones is very much connected into the Chinese Communist Revolution. But even from that point, certainly of Deng Xiaoping, and you have General Wang and Chen Yun and Li Xianyin and Pan Zheng and Chong Renchong and President Yang and Bo Yibo. All of these eight people are directly nexused into Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, basically the exact same banking elite that's been puppeteering the rise of the West in the past century, the rise of the U.S. And so now we have organizations like CITIC, which is a Chinese investment firm, which is basically where these eight immortals have been stashing trillions of dollars. And this is, again, directly tied into Henry Kissinger, who is one of the company's main international advisors, directly nexused into the Rockefeller Group and all of those usual banking circles in the United States. So again, this is all documentable and documented in that documentary, in that podcast that I'm talking about, China and the New World Order. And so it is no surprise whatsoever that all of the hoop and hoopla that's been going on about this new Asian infrastructure investment bank that's supposedly some sort of big rival to the World Bank and the IMF has been embraced with open arms by the World Bank, by the IMF, by people like Henry Kissinger, who just happened to be showing up and talking at a development forum in China the very week the AIIB kerfuffle came to a head. And all of the usual gaggle of globalists have been welcoming this with open arms. And of course, we get reports like this one: China, new Asian bank will enhance international financial system. Talking about how a senior Chinese official says that Beijing's proposed infrastructure bank for Asia is intended to complement and not replace existing leaders dominated by the US and Japan. Surprise, surprise, they are trying to nexus into the international framework as a way of basically leading us towards a new world order. The emphasis there is on world. It is not on the United States of America. For the deluded Americans in the crowd who believe that there is anything to do with nationalism or national pride, or that somehow America is being destroyed, no. The West is being engineered into a world system of governance and government that can only come about through the rise of the East. And this has been a process that's been going on for decades. It's been puppeteered from the very start. There is no doubt whatsoever that China's rise right now is something that has been long planned for and carefully engineered. And we get this from all sorts of different sources, but I think that the AIIB and the New Development Bank and all of this is just another layer of icing on that globalist cake that is leading us towards that. And I think probably the biggest sign will be later this year when the IMF basically reviews their special drawing rights basket. And I think very likely they're going to add the Chinese yuan to that basket, either this review or next, which will come up in 5 years' time. But sometime in the next decade, I'm almost certain of it, the Chinese yuan is going to be added to that basket. And the special drawing rights are going to be used more and more as a reserve currency. The US dollar used less and less. Again, this is all perfectly planned and engineered. This is all going according to plan. This is the New World Order, and the only solution to this, the only way to combat this, is to stop playing the globalist game, to stop rooting for one side against the other in this phony dialectic that is leading us towards globalism, and to take the power back to the individual level, back down, decentralize the power as much as possible. And I talked about how we can do that in a recent podcast called Solutions, the Peer-to-Peer Economy, talking about ways that we can create international structures, sure, because national lines are just lines on a map, they mean nothing whatsoever to free human beings who are individuals who can act and interact and transact with anyone they like anywhere in the world. And that is increasingly being enabled by technology that is making that possible right now, that you and I can have this conversation across halfway across the world. We can transact through cryptocurrencies or whatever type of currency we want in whatever way we want directly with each other. We do not need globalist middlemen. We do not need national governments. We can de-engineer this system that's been engineered around us. And that is the only way we're going to get out of this New World Order trap.
Oh my. Well, that's definitely powerful and scary, and it leads me to believe that this could be really deemed as a geographical power shift more than a even a geopolitical power shift, because, you know, the Republic of the United States has already been gutted. James, this is no longer a country. This is no longer a nation of, by, and for the people. It's of, by, and for the oligarchs and the banksters. And if this is all going according to their plan, then we're in a lot more trouble than so many of us in the alt media have even been led to believe, because this economic collapse that's looming may spell the end of the dollar, but it won't spell the end of the powers that be, as we had been wishfully thinking, will it?
No, because the end of the dollar is necessary to reach that next stage. You can't have a global currency, you can't have a global government, you can't have global taxation if the United States is still the global superpower, unchallenged, dominant powerhouse of the world. It has to come down in order for the global structure to come up. And the only way to do that is to put the nice, happy face on it. Oh, look, now there's this resistance block of these other countries that are going to be standing up to this horrible militarism of NATO and all of this, which is true. The militarism and all of the craziness that we've seen that has been brought about by the rise of the United States as the global unchallenged superpower absolutely is abominable, and it does have to be stopped in some way. So people are putting their faith and their hope and their blind trust in China and Russia as if they've treated their own population so well, and they're going to be the stewards of freedom and peace and happiness throughout the world. Total poppycock. This is absolutely 100% an engineered plan. It is absolutely going according to plan. We've heard people talking about it for decades, how the United States has to be brought down as the world superpower so that these other powers can rise, so that we can have that global government, and we are closer to it than ever. And the only way around this is to stop playing their game, to stop trying to support one side against the other in this phony dialectic. So again, I hope people will look into solutions, the peer-to-peer economy, for one idea of how we can start decentralizing this system, relying on these middlemen who are only gophers and puppets, or at the best, diluted useful tools for the banksters who are puppeteering this, who are financing it, who are demonstrably tied in on both ends in the exact same way as World War I was engineered and brought about with the same people funding both sides, the same way World War II was brought about with the same people funding both sides, the same way the Russian and Chinese revolutions were brought about and engineered by the same banksters. The Third World War is similarly being engineered by the same people, and the only way to stop it is to withdraw our power from that system and to stop identifying with either side on these phony conflicts, and to simply cooperate with other like-minded people, the vast majority of humanity who is not actually playing this stupid globalist game and who just are interested in peace, freedom, and individual happiness.
Yeah, agreed. And guys, before we move on to Fukushima and drought, Agenda 21, as we're seeing drought unfold in the United States, I want to get James' opinion on both of those issues. But what I thought about while listening to you, James, was Putin. I see him, and so many of us see him, as a counterbalance to NATO's and the Pentagon's overreach geopolitically. And where does Putin fit into this scenario? Is Putin a counterbalance to any of this, or is he just as intertwined with this new world order as China?
China is an easy and demonstrable case where you can point specifically to the Rockefeller-Kissinger ties in and the bankster ties into the eight immortals and all of that. So it's a pretty open and shut case. And again, that's in China and the New World Order. I am going to be talking about Russia more in the podcast in the future. I don't think it's as open and shut a case. And I think there is a case to be made that Putin, at the very best, believes himself to be some sort of bulwark or stand against what's happening. I don't buy it for a minute that is ultimately really what's happening. Whether he knows it or not, I don't have any definitive proof of that. But certainly we do know that Putin is good buddy-buddy with Kissinger, that he does dine at Kissinger's house, that they've talked many times, that in fact Kissinger was part of a secret Obama initiative to open up a behind-the-scenes backdoor dialogue with Putin in recent months. That recently came out in the press. He sent Kissinger over there because he knows that he's such buddy-buddy with Putin. So I think there's a lot of suspicious things about Putin, including the billions he has stored offshore in Cyprus, and the fact that he's an FSB thug, and the fact that that he absolutely 100% completely truly knows about 9/11. There's no doubt in my mind that Putin knows what really happened on 9/11, but of course we'll never come out and say it because he's playing the same silly petty war on terror thug tyrant game on his side of the pond as Obama and the U.S. minions are on their side of the pond, which is to say, of course, he's going to use the same phony war on terror idea and construct to basically wage a war wherever he feels it's necessary, including Chechnya or wherever. So and yes, I know this is all a complicated game, but I think absolutely Putin at the very best is just being a useful dupe for the powers that shouldn't be, who are trying to engineer a conflict, the Third World War, in order to bring about their world government. And so again, you can't have that sort of world system without the belligerents basically coming head to head with each other. So I think at the very, very, very best, we can say that Russia and Putin are acting the part of the useful tools of being the so-called opposition, but they're not real opposition, because again, they rely on the same outdated, not just outdated, but fundamentally flawed structures of nationalism is not the bulwark against globalism. That is exactly part of the dialectic that leads us into globalism. I wrote about this recently in the International Forecaster in an editorial called How to Really Defeat Globalism, which points out that nationalism, nation state pride and all of this is part of the construct that has led us towards these global systems of control. It's based on the same flawed fundamental principle that there is some sort of national identity and there is some sort of national government that somehow, in some strange, magic, superstitious ritual, has somehow has the authority to basically pronounce over the lives of everyone who happens to live in a certain geographical area, and they have, for some reason, in some way that has never been described and never explained, somehow have a monopoly use of violence within that geographic area. It is a total fraud that has been perpetrated on the people and has been brought about by a conscious indoctrination effort. I wrote about this in a recent issue of the International Forecaster as well, talking about how it was the education system, the Prussian education system, that was based off of basically a series of speeches that Fichte gave in Germany in the beginning of the 19th century, talking about how, well, we need to basically create this idea of nationalism so that we can create a national government, so that we can have a strong military and basically, you know, defeat our enemies. And that was a consciously engineered part of not only the Prussian education system, but then when it was transplanted to the United States, and there was all sorts of people talking about how we need to basically indoctrinate the pliable workers to be nice pliable workers for the coming industrial era. And unfortunately, that plan went ahead beautifully. So now people think that the way to counteract globalism is, well, we've got to support nationalism. We have to be fiercely nationalist, which of course is just part of the same dialectic. It leads from nationalism to regionalism to globalism. And as long as you're playing that game, they're certainly happy for you to play it. Until you realize you are a free individual human being and there is no restriction or boundary placed upon you by whatever arbitrary lines on a map to interact with anyone you want in any way you want, until we take that freedom back, we are going to be slaves, we are going to be led into this globalist system, and we are going to be part of the New World Order.
James, I do want to move on before we lose you to Fukushima to get an update. A drone recently has captured millions of tons of nuclear waste being stored by the ocean there. TEPCO is, of course, saying that the technology to fix the problem of Fukushima hasn't even been invented yet. They don't know what to do. And it's all just very alarming, James. Can you give us an update on Fukushima as you see it?
Well, the latest news is, I think, indicative of the situation as a whole. And for people who haven't caught it, basically, TEPCO has tried to send in some small robots, including a shape-changing robot, into Reactor 1 in order to try to do some reconnaissance and try to get any sort of handle on where the reactor core is actually lying. And of course, every robot they've ever sent in has ultimately malfunctioned because the radiation levels are too high. And the latest ones that they sent in, the last two shape-changing inspection bots, were no different. One that got stuck on April 10th, and then the second a few days later, that basically had to abandon its camera because the radiation was just making it impossible to function. So I think that's pretty much reflective of the situation as it stands there in Fukushima right now, which is basically the same it's been since the beginning of the disaster and the melt-throughs, which are, we know that the reactors have melted down, 1, 2, and 3. We know that there has been some level of melt-through. We know that the reactor cores are certainly not in their primary containment. We have no
idea where they actually are, and we can't even get a handle on beginning to scope out where they're lying or how to ultimately address that, the core of this problem, if you'll excuse the pun, or maybe that's not just a pun, but an actual statement. But the core of the problem is, of course, the cores, how to get at them, how to address them, how to begin removing or cleaning them up or containing them or doing something to actually get rid of that problem so that the rest of the problem can be dealt with, including the millions of liters of radioactive water that have been stored on site, as we know, since the beginning of this disaster, and they're running out of room, and the containers that they're using to store them are leaking. So it's just disaster upon disaster at Fukushima. No sign of that changing anytime soon. The question ultimately, of course, is what is the ultimate effect of this, and what is being done about it? Of course, I think in the lead up to the 2020 Olympics, we're going to see as much hush-hush and as much trying to keep the covers on this and trying to look the other way as possible. Certainly among the Japanese media and the Japanese government and TEPCO, I think they're going to collude in continuing to try to keep the lid on this situation so that people will feel fine and dandy about coming to Tokyo for 2020. In fact, Fukushima has even been proposed, or has proposed itself as a potential venue for baseball events at the 2020 Olympics. So who knows, there might even be players who will be playing there in Fukushima, which will be great for Fukushima tourism, I'm sure. But again, the core of the problem, the actual cores themselves, has not been addressed and cannot be addressed with the technology that exists right now. There is no robot strong enough or radiation-proof enough to get anywhere near the reactors to see where and how they're lying and how to address that problem. And until that happens, then all of the ancillary problems, the groundwater flowing through the site that's getting contaminated and spilling out into the ocean, none of that's going to be fixed. Which is why, of course, I think anyone who's eating any of the fish that have been fished off of around the Fukushima area are deluding themselves about the nature of the radiation that's spilling out into there, and also, of course, the reliability of the tests that the Japanese government has been conducting to prove that that fish is safe for consumption. I think we can trust that about as far as we can throw it. So I think there's a lot of factors going on there, and unfortunately, I think for the people of the Fukushima region, this is not a tragedy that is going to resolve itself anytime in the near future, and the decontamination theater that they've been running in various villages around the evacuation zone is just that. It's theater. It's not really solving the fundamental problem, which is the ongoing radiation that is continuing to take place because the fundamental core problem hasn't been addressed.
Yeah, it's terrifying because it's clear that there's no end in sight. And, you know, I'll tell you what, James, in this country, we don't hear anything about Fukushima from the Mockingbird mainstream media. Nothing, ever. They never bring up Fukushima. I don't remember the last time there was a report about Fukushima or radiation. And, you know, again, if we frame this entire conversation, as I suggested from the beginning, with the idea of depopulation in mind, it's all very scary because, you know, I just interviewed Dane Wickington from geoengineeringwatch.com. And during the course of that 1 hour interview, he noted that ionosphere heaters like HAARP are being used as weapons of cataclysmic destruction. MIT noted the anomalous heating directly above the epicenter of the quake in Japan just before its occurrence. He says 3.5 billion watts can cause seismic activity. And the reason I bring that up, James, is because we see what appears to be a targeted engineered drought on the west coast of the United States. HAARP has been cited by many researchers, the HAARP report on YouTube and others, as being one of the components to cause the drought and create the polar vortex, which is very anomalous. And again, to frame the conversation up as one about depopulation, what do you make of the California drought? Because what's being reported here is that people need to cut their use of water drastically. The privatization of water utilities and water rights is now in play. And it all sounds like Agenda 21 planning to me. It sounds like Agenda 21 unfolding in the United States. How do you see it?
Well, I haven't examined the California drought specifically enough to be able to comment on that with any degree of accuracy, but I can, of course, confirm what you're saying about the MIT report about the ionospheric heating that occurred over Fukushima right before the earthquake, which is particularly interesting because now scientists are speculating, well, maybe the ionospheric disturbances can be used as a predictor of earthquakes. So now they're trying to say that this is just some sort of natural phenomenon that happens before earthquakes, and they're now positing this because, well, it happened in Fukushima, without actually even beginning to mention, of course, the ionospheric heaters. And it's important to note that it's not just HARP, it's ionospheric heaters all over the world by multiple governments. So there's a lot more than just HARP out there. There's a lot of different facilities that can actually effectuate this type of ionospheric heating that can result in all sorts of crazy effects, including, I have no doubt, weather modification manipulation, which has been an admitted part of the U.S. Air Force agenda for decades, going back to the owning the weather by 2025 and documents like that. So we know that weather modification manipulation has been tested, has been used, has been experimented with, has been legislated against at the United Nations. So it's not some sort of crazy conspiracy theory to talk about it. Whether or not it's being specifically applied in California, I haven't looked into enough to be able to say definitively, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. And certainly I think it is part of a much larger agenda to bring about the types of disturbances that, once again, the only answer, what other answer could there be? The only answer is some sort of world institution, world body to save us all from this. And of course, this coincides directly and nicely with the Club of Rome documents from 1990 talking about the first global revolution, where they noted specifically that, well, wouldn't climate change or something of that sort fit the bill perfectly if we wanted to bring about fundamental societal changes? It would be great if we could basically make humans the enemy, make humans the blame of this. So we can blame it all on people driving SUVs or whatever, and thus humans are the enemy, thus we can target them in this, basically, this strategy to bring about our goals. And that's exactly what's been going on. So whether or not California is a case of this, I don't know, but it, as I say, it fits in perfectly with that plan, which is to try to centralize as much power as possible in international, unaccountable agencies as a way of saving us from this problem that very likely they themselves are creating.
Well, it's just brilliant commentary, James, and that's why Long John Silver said, bring on James Corbett to help clear things up a bit. I just want to flush out one last thing with you. There's a report from Deagle.com, and the reason I'm bringing it up is because of what we have just been discussing, because of the Club of Rome documents, which you cited, because of the engineered drought and HARP and the use of these things. Deagle.com has recently lowered their population model for the United States in 2025 to 65 million. And of course, it's very easy for people to get excited about that kind of information because it suggests a genocide or a nuclear war or something horrible. But just to come full circle, we're beginning to see the quantifiable ways in which a drastic depopulation of the United States could occur over the next decade. An epic drought without end in California is one of those ways. It was Jerry Brown, the governor of California, who just recently said that the sustainable capacity of California is about 500,000 people. There's 38, 39 million people living there, James. It seems to me that the powers that be are executing some sort of plan. And I just want to read this from Deagle.com, which predicts 65 million people is the total population of the United States by 2025. They cite migration out of the United States as one big reason for that. And they say, I quote, "The collapse of the Western financial system will wipe out the standard of living of its population while ending Ponzi schemes such as the stock exchange and the pension funds. The population will be hit so badly that the migration engine will start to work in reverse, accelerating itself due to ripple effects, thus leading to the demise of the United States." Deagle notes, "By the way, no pandemic or nuclear war is included in the forecast," end quote. I share that with people because the Georgia Guidestones come to mind. It's part of a depopulation agenda, it seems to me. Am I overreaching? Am I overstretching? Or when we take the drought and we take famine and we take economic collapse and the end of the dollar and we put all of those things together, does it spell depopulation? Does it spell genocide? Does it spell hell on earth here in the United States? Seems to me that it does.
Well, you don't have to speculate or reach on the depopulation agenda. And this is something that I've talked about quite a bit on my podcast. So I just ask people to look into the Corbett Report archives on depopulation. But you're right. I mean, it's not just the Georgia Guidestones, but it's people like Ted Turner. It's people like Prince Philip. It's many, many others who have talked about how wonderful it would be if we could just control this population and bring it down to levels that are quote unquote sustainable. And this has to do with that idea of carrying capacity for the earth, which is a ridiculous, basically eugenical concept that dates back to Thomas Malthus at the very least, and this idea that, oh, the population is growing too quickly and we just don't have enough food, which is a demonstrable lie. It's not that we don't have enough food, it's just that in whatever system you tend to look at, it's just that there's a few oligarchical elite at the top who tend to control most of the vast wealth, and that's the reason why overpopulation appears to be a problem in a lot of places. Now, the answer to that, according to these oligarchical tyrants who themselves are engineering the problem, is, well, we've just got to kill off a lot of people. And unfortunately, so many people have been indoctrinated since their early childhood, as I myself was in the Canadian public school system, but I'm sure it's similar in America and elsewhere, that, oh, you know, the environment, the earth is dying, and the only way to help it is to basically eliminate more people from that population. And unfortunately, a lot of people have internalized that. I think it's scary, not just that there's one or two angles that this could be happening, for example, weather manipulation, drought, creating droughts or that type of thing, or an economic collapse, which I think we all understand is being engineered, but that there are literally dozens of different angles and vectors that this could happen. And one of the most disturbing to me is what is documentably happening with declining fertility levels in the industrialized world. We know that for in the past 50 years, sperm motility and sperm just numbers, the number of sperm in men has declined 50%. That's a remarkable number, and it actually means that they have, over the past few decades, on multiple occasions, had to adjust what they call the fertile level among men. They actually keep adjusting it downwards because this number keeps declining. That's a sign there's something seriously wrong, and we do know that there are all these endocrine disrupting estrogen mimickers that are being increasingly placed in our environment through the BPA and all of these other chemicals that are being engineered into our society. And BPA is a particularly interesting one because people might may or may not know bisphenol A was in fact used as an estrogen mimicker. It was understood to be that before it was decided that would be the perfect chemical to use in the construction of such things as the liners for food tins and things of that nature. So I think, again, there's a much bigger agenda that's going on right now that is being implemented in a lot of different ways, which means that, I don't know, 65 million in the next 10 years, bringing the population down to 65 million in the next 10 years, certainly possible, and there are a lot of different vectors through which that could happen. And I think that's something we at least have to be aware of, and counteracting the propaganda that makes people actually want to actually desire their own elimination from the planet. I think that's the sickest part of this, is that a lot of people would look at that and go, well, good, there's too many of us anyway. And I think that is absolute propaganda that's been engineered into us. And people should be careful what they wish for, because I'm afraid they might just get it.
Yeah, and that's where I agree with you above all else. I've long said that this collapse that's coming, I don't wish it on anybody, because it could be far darker, far longer, far more painful, and far more horrendous than anything that any of us have envisioned, imagined, or would ever hope for. It reminds me of Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which if you haven't seen that movie, guys, check out The Road. It will leave you weeping. If you have a soul. And I guess we're up against the clock here. We need to let James go. But I just want to circle back and say the reason I brought up the Deagle.com prediction is because they say, and it's what we've been documenting, and they say the collapse of the Western financial system will wipe out the standard of living of its population while ending Ponzi schemes such as the stock exchange and the pension funds. And if James is right about China and the New World Order, that means there will be no safety net for the people of the United States. There may be no way to get back our sovereignty, and there may be no path back to liberty. And at the end of the day, that's the saddest damn thing I can report, and I hate to do it, but it seems like that's what we're up against. James, how can listeners find your China and the New World Order report?
Well, if you go to corbettreport.com, as we speak, it's right up on the front page, the transcript, which includes the link to the YouTube and the podcast itself. Or you can just type it into my search engine, or type it into any search engine, China and the New World Order. It will come up. And I hope people will check into that and look at some of the facts that are in there. They can be quite startling to people who don't know otherwise. And again, the answer to this is individual sovereignty, taking it back down to the individual level. It is a matter of consciousness. This is above all else a war on consciousness to get you to buy into the propaganda and to go along with the system. Our greatest power is in resistance, in failure to comply with their system. And we can do that and effectuate that in our own lives starting today. So that's something that to keep in mind. I just hope people will check into that. Once again, I'm at corbettreport.com.
Well, our guest has been James Corbett of corbettreport.com. James, is there anything else you'd like to plug? I'd love to support you in any way we can. And by the way, you are the number one guy in alt media, and everybody recognizes it, readers alike. We hear people commenting about you all the time. I want you to know how appreciated you are and how everyone appreciates your efforts so much. Is there anything else you want to call attention to or plug?
Well, I do want to thank everyone for their support, and literally this website isn't possible without their support. Not just monetary support, but helping to spread the information, which above all else is the most important part. So my hat's off to everyone involved in that effort. People who are interested in other sites that I participated in can definitely check out theinternationalforecaster.com, where all of my editorials are posted, boilingfrogspost.com, Global Research TV, all of those types of places. And again, they're all linked up from my site. So basically the best place to go is corbettreport.com, and which is where you can also find FukushimaUpdate.com.
All right. Very good. Thank you so much for your time, James.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
A thrill as well for me. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We very much appreciate your support at sgtreport.com, thephaser.com, and thelibertymill.com. Real news 24/7. God bless. Have a great week.